Well, as we've been hearing in these final few days of the campaign, both the leaders are spending a lot of time talking up their economic credentials and trying to emphasise the risk of voting for their opponent. Joining us now to work through just who has the safer pair of hands when it comes to the economy are two prominent economists. Dr. Nicholas Gruen is the CEO of Lateral Economics. He was appointed by the Rudd government to chair its 2.0 task force. He worked for two Labor ministers during the Hawke years and more recently was the director of the Business Council of Australia's New Directions program. He's in our Melbourne studio. And in the World Today studio in Sydney is Dr. Oliver Hartwich. Dr. Hartwich is a research fellow at the Centre for Independent Studies, and he's been a member of influential think tanks in Europe and the United Kingdom, most recently the Policy Exchange in the UK from 2005 until 2008. Welcome to you both. Now, the Coalition released its policy costings yesterday and promised to cut $30 billion worth of government debt and deliver a $6.2 billion surplus in 3 years' time, but it didn't put its costings through the Treasury. Nick Gruen, is their analysis credible?
Look, I don't think it is. They've got an accounting firm to produce a document in which all of these policies, I'm looking at it now, are simply given one-line answers, so there is no evidence of how the numbers are worked, and it's an accounting firm, it's not an economic analysis, so I don't rate it terribly highly.
Oliver Hartwich, if the Coalition had given its costings to the Treasury, the voters would have a more detailed understanding of where the money's coming from, wouldn't they?
That's probably correct, but I mean, regardless of where the costings are coming from, the government is not much more credible either, because a lot of the budget forecasts that we have seen from the government rely, for example, on on-cost delivery of the national broadband network and the mining tax, and nobody really knows how that's going to play out in the end.
Well, Tony Abbott has been making the federal government's debt a major political issue. Oliver Hartwich, how big a problem is it in economic terms?
Well, I think at the moment it isn't such a big problem because Australia still is the envy of the world when it comes to its fiscal position. However, if you go back into history and we have a look at Europe 30 years ago, they were basically taking the same cavalier approach to debt. They were saying, well, a little deficit here and there doesn't really matter, and look where Europe is today. So I think we are right to take this seriously as a matter and try to bring the budget back to surplus as soon as possible.
Nick Gruen, it does go to the credibility of the government if it is taking a cavalier approach to debt. Do you think that the government is a credible economic manager?
Look, my one-word answer to that is yes, and I suspect the government one would get from the Coalition would also be economically responsible in a kind of basic fiscal sense. But what we're looking at here is sort of several things at once, and the great pity here is that if we were talking about monetary policy, we would have confidence in what was going to happen because we've had a lot of institutional development so that the government just doesn't come out and announce the cash rate. That's done by an independent institution. And that's the sort of thing we need in fiscal policy because if there is a double dip global downturn, then we shouldn't be rushing back to surplus. If the economy continues to grow strongly and China recovers and China powers on, then I would be the first to say that both of the parties should be trying to deliver larger surpluses. So
the
problem
Gruen,
is we can't... Yeah.
Do you think that the government has been taking a cavalier approach to debt?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The government this is the great problem, that the government has basically taken its Treasury's advice. Treasury is hardly the spendthrift of the year. Treasury did a lot of preparatory work in, I think, 2004, 2005, sort of wargaming a global downturn. They said, here, this is what you should do, and the government did it. And what happened? The opposition did what an opposition would do and probably what the Labor Party would have done in opposition, which is to say, here's a crazy spendthrift government. Now, compare that with what happened in monetary policy. We just cut rates. Nobody said, oh, well, we're doing that because we're trying to pander to the electorate. They said, well, if we're cutting rates, there must be a reason why we're doing that.
Oliver Hartwich, even with the mismanagement of various of the stimulus schemes, there's no denying that Australia made it through the global economic crisis in remarkably good shape. To what extent are you prepared to give the government credit for that?
Well, it's very difficult, actually, to determine how much credit the government deserves, but there are definitely other factors at work. When we're just looking how Australia made it through the GFC, definitely India and China and the demand for our commodities played a big role in this. And apart from that, I mean, the government spent $52 billion on stimulus measures, and they claim to have saved or created 200,000 jobs. Now, that would cost $260,000 per job. I don't think that is a particularly good piece of economic management. Apart from that, you may ask yourself, I mean, if Australia was in such a good shape before the GFC, why was it that Australia spent the third highest amount per capita in stimulus spending of all OECD economies? Frankly, I think that was a bit exaggerated.
Nicholas Groom, what do you make of the amount there when Oliver Hartwick divides
well,
it up in terms
absurd.
Of the...
It's absurd. The stimulus... if there was overspending on the stimulus, then... I mean, this is a rough rule of thumb, but I mean, if there was some massive overspending on the stimulus, unemployment would have gone down. Unemployment went up, so the stimulus was filling in the hole, but not entirely filling in the hole. So it seems to me that's a pretty good basic indicator that the stimulus spending was about right. And yes, of course, it's true that there were other factors. Monetary policy was eased, and we later, somewhat later in the process, got some pull through from China. But it's, you know, this stuff about how the fact that we've done so well somehow proves that it wasn't necessary to have the fiscal stimulus seems to me to be kind of completely contradictory. The whole point of the fiscal stimulus was to deliver the sort of result we got.
Now, we will move on in a moment, but Oliver Hartwich, you're signalling that you want to come in.
He deserves a right of reply.
Well, I think one of the factors that we, for example, always forget is the exchange rate. The exchange rate dropped from 98 US dollar cents down to about 60, so that gave a clear boost to Australian exporters. It definitely helped us to get through the GFC, and I think, again, I wouldn't overstate the government's contribution to all of that.
Oliver, you noticed the big export surge. Did you at about the time that people were being employed in
now,
shops
now I'm going
and so on?
I'm going to move you two on. Let's look at a little more detail at some of the specific policies being offered in this election campaign. Labor's major infrastructure program is the $43 billion broadband network, which it's funding chiefly from government borrowings. The coalition's promising to raise $20 billion through infrastructure bonds. Nick Gruen, which do you regard as the better approach to dealing with infrastructure?
Well, they're sort of very different questions, and I'd give a very lukewarm, I don't know whether I want to give a tick to the Labor Party, but I'm a lukewarm supporter of the NBN, but the process that has been gone through can hardly be described as stellar, and I'm nervous about the opposition's policy on infrastructure. It would be nice to get more private money into infrastructure, but we've been there and seen what can be done if we overdo that, which is that we end up with private-public partnerships which are much more expensive for the economy than normally debt-funded infrastructure.
And just to clarify, why are you lukewarm about the NBN?
Well, the NBN is a leap of faith, and I guess I'm a bit of a believer in, but I think that there's no excuse for not doing a proper cost-benefit analysis. There are plenty of ways in which the process could be a lot better than it has been.
Oliver Hartwich is nodding his head there, but Oliver Hartwich, let me get you to address both those issues. In terms of infrastructure, who has the better approach? Because, of course, the coalition's approach is quite different. It's looking at raising several billions of dollars, but through the issuing of infrastructure bonds.
I think that's an interesting approach. I agree with Nicholas. I would also like to see more private capital invested in infrastructure. And I think that's an alternative to government spending. And I'm in complete agreement with Nicholas, which leaves me a bit flabbergasted here. But on the broadband network, it reminds me a bit of the experience that a lot of telcos in Europe have made over the past decades with several investment in new telco technologies. In the 1990s, if you remember, everybody thought that ISDN was the way forward for internet access. Then they invested huge amounts of money into their ISDN networks, only to discover about 10 years later that ADSL was the technology to go for. Now they seem to repeat exactly the same kind of mistakes with fiber optics, when nobody knows whether in 5 or 10 years' time there will not be other technologies around, like satellite or wireless or whatever. And I think we're putting all our eggs into one basket, and it's going to be a very expensive basket at $43 billion.
Well, another difference between the two major parties is on the mining tax. Oliver Hartwich, staying with you, given that the three big miners have agreed to it, is it economically responsible for the coalition not to go ahead with the mining tax as it currently stands?
Well, as you said, it was a compromise with three mining companies. They had left out all the small miners. And apart from that, I think it was ripped out of the Henry tax review. And actually what Henry proposed was something quite different. He saw the mining tax as part of a wider restructuring of mining taxes, including the abolition of state royalties. I think as such, it would have probably made sense. But in the current form, I think it is wise to go back to the drawing board.
Nick Gruen, there is a risk, isn't there, that the mining tax could stymie one of the top-performing sectors of our economy?
No, I don't think there's a risk of that at all. It's a windfall tax, so that's fairly cheeky, but I don't believe that it would... It's likely... I mean, Twiggy Forrest says that it would, you know, that it gets in the way of his financing agreements, and I have little doubt that that's the case. So what would happen is that there would be some delay, a financing delay, and Twiggy Forrest would have to take on more equity. But the basic economics of the mining tax are such that for, I'm not suggesting it has no distortions at all, but for the amount of revenue that it was capable of raising, and that's been greatly degraded, as tends to happen when you go and ask people how much you would like, they would like you to tax them. This was a very good policy to start off with, and it's just somewhat less good now.
Briefly now to company tax. Labor's promising to cut it. The Coalition will increase it, at least in the short term, because of its parental leave program. Nick Gruen, should reducing company tax be a top priority for the next government?
Yeah, I think it should be. I think company tax is one of the most expensive taxes we have. That, I mean, it's one of the reasons we could have jacked up mining tax, which is a tax on rent, and lowered company tax by much more than than either party is promising to do. And in fact, Henry had suggested that. The one thing I would say, though, is that dividend imputation is an incredibly expensive giveaway to shareholders in Australia, and I'm on the record as arguing that we should basically cash that out, abolish it, and get our rate, our company rate, down to probably somewhere near Irish levels, of which is 12.5%, but certainly somewhere around Hong Kong's level of 17%.
Oliver Harpwich, what sort of rate would you recommend?
I wouldn't recommend a specific rate, but I think the direction is important. We have to show that we're definitely going in the direction of lower taxes. However, I think at the same time we shouldn't lose sight of the bigger picture, which is budget consolidation, and I think in the medium term, we should really balance the two objectives.
The Coalition says its parental leave impost is not a tax on companies but a short-term levy. Oliver Hart, is there really any difference?
If it looks like a tax and if it sounds like a tax and walks like a tax, it's a tax.
Oliver, we agree again.
Good.
We're agreeing far too much. It's not healthy.
I'm very sorry about that. But anyway, I think they have promised to look into removing the tax in the future. But as we all know, taxes have an incredibly long lifespan. Just to give you one little anecdote, the German government introduced a sparkling wine tax to finance the First World War fleet. Well, that tax is still with the Germans.
and the other point is that the company tax impost is on big companies. Why is it on big companies? Because big companies don't vote as much as little companies, so it exacerbates a distortion that we have in payroll tax, where all the state governments have exempted small business, so it's a dumb tax.
Well, on that note of agreement, we'll wrap it up. Gentlemen, thanks both for joining us.
Thanks, Donald.
Thank you.
Thanks, Oliver.
Thank you.
And so that's Dr. Nicholas Gruen, the CEO of Lateral Economics, and Dr. Oliver Hartwich, the Research Fellow at the Centre for Independent Studies.